Hey, Anna, you know we're in the middle of Saturn season, and you've seen it through a telescope, right?
It's amazing.
Isn't it cool, yeah, all the rings absolutely. And everything like that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so did you know that Saturn is Beyonce's favorite planet?
Beyonce's favorite planet?
Yes, it is her favorite planet. All the single ladies.
Because you put a ring on it?
You got it.
Wow. That solid, was something.
Solid intro from the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio. This is Looking Up, and I'm Dean Regas.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. In this episode, we're talking about the Cassini Project to Saturn with our guest, Deputy Project Scientist Scott Edgington from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. All right, so my favorite mission.
Favorite mission.
It's one of the only ones I really know anything about, but so far so good. Cassini.
Yes.
It's ending.
I know. This is getting kind of sad. I know the Cassini. Yeah. You've been following this for a long, long, long time, the Cassini mission.
Define long time.
Days. You've been rolling for this days.
Weeks worth of emotional investment. I agree. Yeah. But this has been going on for a lot longer than that, right? I'm a little behind.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a mission that launched from Earth in 1997. So to go from Earth to Saturn was an incredibly long trip. It took 7 years to get there just to go from Earth to Saturn. So 97, they leave. They get to Saturn in 2004. And this is an unmanned mission. And it's meant to study the whole planet, the moons, the rings, everything that's so awesome about Saturn. And what they did differently with this mission is previous ones flew by at tremendous speeds and they took some pictures. This one, they put on the brakes, slowed it down so it would just continue to go in orbit around Saturn over and over and over again.
I love it.
And so, yeah, since 2004, we've been getting these great, amazing shots of the rings and the moons and all sorts of things. So I think you've been kind of checking out their websites, right? Isn't it like a total, you can totally lose a half hour just looking at beautiful pictures.
Just the pictures. I mean, looking at Saturn through a telescope is incredible, admittedly, but these are so detailed and they're so pretty. And I just feel like they look so cool. And I wish we could just let Cassini do its thing forever.
I know, but it will. Its time has come. And so September 15th will be its final plunge into Saturn. And that's about it. But we can celebrate.
That's about it. Billions of dollars later.
But it went way past its expectations. I mean, the fact that it was in orbit around Saturn for 13 years without hardly any problems. And
they tried. They've been trying to crash it, right? Tell me, what are they doing?
So they're doing these death plunges. They're plunging. So most of the time it's been hanging out pretty far from the planet, taking pictures from farther distance. So towards the end of the mission, they're doing these daredevil plunges between the planet and the rings itself. There's a gap between the planet there. And that's, they thought, we're about out of fuel. Let's just see if we don't hit anything. Let's try it. Let's see
pretty
what happens.
Freewheeling for a bunch of us.
They're all just scientists. The scientists are like, well, we got a couple more days. What can we do that's really dangerous?
What's going to be fun for us?
Yeah, what would be fun for us? Let's do something. And so they
but went it's between, surviving,
and
right?
They survived. They survived each plunge that they're trying to destroy it. But they, and so finally, the fuel tanks are totally gone. And so that's going to be it. But still, all the stuff that they've discovered, I guess what really gets me, of course, I love the rings. I love seeing these rings that are around this planet. And we could actually see these close-up details of individual rings and how they move, because they all are going around the planet. But we've actually seen them being disturbed by certain moons that go by. And so there's moons within the rings and moons outside the rings, and they are all interacting in this beautiful dance. This flow of material is really so cool.
It's kind of poetic for you, isn't it?
Saturn gets me. Saturn gets me. I don't know.
So the moons of Saturn, when I think of like moons around a planet, I think of them outside the rings, just because Saturn is kind of a package deal. Saturn and the rings, you know. So there's moons in between too?
Yes. Yeah. Wow. So if you see the pictures of Saturn, like the real detailed ones, they have the solid ring parts that, and then there's little black gaps. These black look like black rings. It's essentially where there's less stuff there, but they're finding moons inside those gaps. And so that's what's so unique about this is that you can see those interacting as well.
Wow.
I think these images are really amazing. And again, think this is like 1990s technology mm-hmm. that's out there.
Flip phones.
Yeah.
All I can think is.
Tell me about that. Phones. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still using flip
phones. Again, yeah. Hold on. What are we talking about? You had one like last year.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I moved on. I got the.
Look at an iPhone like
I got
three.
iPhone one. iPhone
you still can't work.
Minus two. Where's the on button?
Yeah. That's what is this?
Is that what I always say?
Yeah, you're getting there.
Yeah. So, but the moons that it's passed by is, I think that's uh-huh. really exciting too, because we've got this moon called Titan. It's an incredibly large moon.
It's a pretty boss name for it.
It's
moon.
A good Titan. Yeah, Titan. That's right. And it is about the size of Mercury. So it's a huge uh-huh. moon. It's like a world on its own. And we didn't know what was going on there because it has this very thick atmosphere. Uh-huh. So we can't see it from Earth-bound telescopes.
Oh.
But Cassini has a radar map, and so they could look down below the clouds and map the entire moon. So it's actually like another planet in essence. And this moon has liquid, it has an atmosphere, it has weather, it has waves, it has all oceans.
Sounds like
seas.
Another planet.
Sounds I've like heard, another planet.
Yeah, like Earth maybe.
But slight differences.
Oh.
Like it's, 200 below zero. The liquid is liquid methane, not water. You die instantly, that kind of thing. So
and there's Sunshine Regis back with the...
bringing it down.
That's right. Back to Earth,
womp,
literally.
Womp. Womp, womp. Yeah, but still, it's cool. And so part of this mission, it was so long ago, I almost forget about it, is that they actually dropped a spacecraft. Cassini had an extra spacecraft on it called the Huygens probe.
A spare.
It was an extra little, it looked like a Frisbee that they had.
Oh my gosh,
it was
it's
hitching
adorable.
The ride, and uh-huh. it's called the Huygens probe, and it descended uh-huh. down onto Titan.
Uh-huh.
So it went through the atmosphere, opened up a parachute, landed down onto the ground, and took some pictures of Titan. So we have a spacecraft on Titan also.
Is it there now?
Or it's
did
still
it like,
there.
What's going to happen to it?
Oh, it stopped working a long time ago, like almost instantly.
There's no happy ending here.
No, but it did take some good pictures. And so we do have these great pictures of Titan as well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. What about Enceladus?
Enceladus is
a
super.
I'm dropping
super,
terms on you.
Oh,
I'm
man, like, you got it. Somebody read the Cliff Notes today.
Somebody read the article you sent me in preparation for this podcast.
That's right. Enceladus, I know, is this other little moon. It's very small. And you got to think, Saturn and its system is almost a billion miles away from us, almost a billion miles from the sun. So incredibly cold.
Mm-hmm.
But here we've got this little world that's so tiny, but it has geysers of liquid water shooting off of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so there's
that's
some
cool.
heat source there, some internal heat source.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's not a solid frozen ice ball.
Mm-hmm.
It is something is going on, and it has liquid water on it, and that is
now I want
really
an ice
exciting.
Ball. Oh, sorry.
You want
what are you talking about?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm going back. I was thinking like blue raspberry.
Bring you back to Earth.
So it's even though it's really cold, it has some it's like
there's
heat
some
source.
Heat source going on in there, and we're not sure exactly what's going on, but that is a moon to watch in the future. That is for sure. We want to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the sad part is there's no mission
that's
following this. There's nothing that's going to follow up to Cassini and go out there and see this stuff. And so that's something I hope we can get back on the table because, first off, Saturn's the most awesome planet. I mean,
totally.
I think we can all agree with
that.
Are
you playing favorites on planets?
I do.
Oh
I
my
do.
Gosh.
There's no even close second. I mean,
oh.
Jupiter, please.
Real talk.
Yeah. Mars,
well,
come
Jupiter,
on.
Jupiter, please.
Please.
It's true.
Saturn's the
fabulous.
Best. So, yeah, hopefully we'll get some really great data on these last couple days and last couple plunges that it's going to do. But for folks out there, if you can get to your local observatory, planetarium, or science center and see Saturn for yourself through a telescope, definitely do it. We just
Absolutely.
Have a few more weeks of Saturn season. We're really fortunate to welcome Scott Edgington, Cassini's deputy project scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab. Well, Scott, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Well, I know this is kind of a big moment here. We're at the end of an era, the end of a mission here. How is the mood over there with Cassini Central?
It's one of excitement and let's just say kind of bittersweet moments as we remember, that we're doing the last of just about everything.
I know. Well, so it's been there 13 years, right?
Yes,
it's
yes.
In orbit around Saturn?
Oh, yes. Yeah, 200 some orbits around Saturn, and 127 flybys of Titan, and 21 of Enceladus. I mean, just amazing what you could do in that time period.
Yeah. How long have you been with the mission?
I've been on the mission for, it's 16 years now.
Wow. So that was, you got on board en route.
Yes, yes. I started in 2001, so had a 3-year duty, you know, basically preparing for arrival.
Well, out of all these missions, you know, there's something about the Cassini that gets me. I don't know if it's the pictures, it's the marketing you guys did with it. Like, because there's a lot of pictures of the Cassini flying around. It's like artist renditions of Cassini circling around Saturn. And there's the spacecraft with Saturn in the background. I feel a little sad. I don't know. Or do you feel this too? You know,
or
it's like,
very sad.
Okay, I'm very sad.
Come
That's
on,
true. Very
sad.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah, it's, you know, sad that it's ending, but unfortunately we have to because we're running out of fuel. And, in fact,
can't
if you look at the numbers...
Can't we just send more fuel up there? It's so adorable doing its little thing, and I love all the pictures and everything. I mean, man, all right.
Yeah, we're going to try to lobby to see if you do one more time. Come on, one more time around.
One more time? Okay. Yes, let's do that.
We did it. We convinced him.
All right. All right. There. Well, so why? Yeah. What does the why end now after all these years?
Well, basically, as I said, we're out of fuel. If you look at the fuel gauge, we're literally on zero. If you talk to our engineers, they say, "Oh, we have 10 more kilograms plus minus 20."
Oh, whoa. Well, that makes you worried then, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, we can't just park it in an orbit to continuously go around Saturn because there's the probability that we might run into Titan or Enceladus at some point during that time. And so these bodies have been found to be habitable places for life. And so we want to protect them, and it wouldn't do us any good crashing anything into them. And so the safest place to put it is right into the planet.
Well, so what's the timetable, I guess, for the last plunge?
Well, we kick off the final half orbit with Titan. And that happens on September 11. Titan just nudges us just a tiny little bit from our current set of orbits, which have been taking the spacecraft into the gap between the planet and the rings. That last nudge from Titan sends us right into the planet. And so we, in the days leading up to September 15, we plan on collecting the last of our observations, some which are pictures of the entire system, Saturn, as we're approaching it. We're going to snapshot a last image of Titan to see what the clouds are doing there. We're also going to look at Enceladus, and we have this really cool sequence where Enceladus is kind of setting behind Saturn.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to, you know, snap that movie there. And then along the way, we're collecting plasma data. And basically, there's a lot of charged particles in the magnetic field around Saturn. And so those instruments will be on. And our mass spectrometer, in particular, will be interested in seeing what the upper reaches of the atmosphere is like.
So it's going to be collecting data all the way down, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
As long as it can.
Yeah. As long as we can, yeah, we're going to be firing the thrusters to keep us stable, but at some point those thrusters will be overcome by the atmospheric torques, and so that will cause the spacecraft to start veering off of Earth point, and that's when we will lose signal. And probably a few minutes after, that's where, you know, things will start to basically break off, melt, or, you know, and eventually become crushed by the atmosphere.
Man, Anna's face just turned, like, sad.
It's really sad. I thought it was just going to, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like a, I mean, it's.
We were just talking about Eclipse and she does nothing, no reaction, but this, the right. death of a spacecraft. This is.
Well, but I think it's really exciting what you know, that this has been going on for so long. I feel like people have not appreciated it properly, and me included, until now that it's sort of like, you know, done its like victory lap or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Was there, what are the highlights, I guess, for you that, from the Cassini mission?
Well, I think the biggest highlight for me is the discovery of hydrothermal activity on Enceladus. Here's this tiny little moon, which we had suspected was creating the E-ring around Saturn, which is a very tenuous ring of ice particles. And, you know, we kind of suspected, since it was embedded in there, that it was a source. It wasn't until we got to Saturn that and flew by Enceladus where we detected plumes.
So this was a moon. So this is a moon essentially creating its own ring.
Yes, right. And so you know, we discovered it because our magnetic field instrument detected a deviation from what's expected if it were, say, a solid body. And so over the years, we've flown by it, I believe, 21 times. And we've learned about the gravity, and we've actually sampled material from that plume. And based on that data, we know that there's a liquid water ocean underneath its icy shell. And by sampling the molecules that come out of it, it's mostly water ice, but there's also methane and hydrogen and silica. Silica is SiO2. It's grains of sand on a beach.
Oh, wow.
And,
wait, there's a beach there?
Well, the
I think
only
I missed the point of that.
That's all she heard.
I heard beach.
Beach, yes. who knows what's underneath that icy shell?
That's details.
Right. Yeah. So, the only way you could get SiO2 is to make it by combining liquid water and rocky material at really high boiling temperatures. And so we know that deep inside this moon, there's a liquid water ocean interacting with its rocky core.
Wow. That is really cool.
Yeah, and when you look for life, you know, you look for things like, you know, is there an energy source? Well, yes, there is. And then you ask, is there a liquid water? Yes, there is. And then you ask, is there the chemical elements that you need? Well, we've detected methane and molecular hydrogen, which primitive bacteria would need for life. So this opens up a whole new world to be explored.
Well, so I'm always curious about the, you know, being there in the mission control there, and what's a typical day like for somebody working at the Cassini mission?
Well, lots and lots of meetings.
Well, I mean, there's probably a lot of waiting. You know, you have these flybys, and you have very intense amount of data coming in, and then you have to wait a while. Is it kind of like that? It's like hurry up and wait, and then hurry up and wait again.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a steady stream of things, and everything's planned out. Every minute on the spacecraft is literally planned out, and there could be science observations going on board the spacecraft, and obviously you can't downlink while you're doing that. So you have to wait. But in the meantime, there's other things to be working on. For example, do we need to design a firing of the rockets to steer the spacecraft? And so you know, there's a whole team of people who's dedicated to doing that sort of work. The navigators, you know, they're trying to keep us on track. And then there's all the monitoring of, you know, different pieces of the spacecraft. For example, we have gyros on board, and, you know, we need to make sure that those gyros are spinning at the right rates, not seizing up, not misbehaving, because if they do, it could affect an instrument that is sensitive to those vibrations that's generated. So there's a whole engineering staff you know, looking at questions like that, keeping an eye on the power levels, for example. So there's always something to do. In the meantime, there's the people who plan the science. And, you know, we literally were having weekly meetings with the scientists in all of our five disciplines. Basically, we split the science up into categories. For example, if you want to study Titan, you're negotiating your science with the Titan scientists. Same thing with those who are interested in, say, rings. And so...
So there's teams.
I was going to say, is there like a rivalry?
Team Titan, Team Grings, Team Enceladus.
Team Keep Cassini Going.
Exactly.
Just kidding, I added that one. That's cool.
So each discipline has their own group of scientists that basically discuss, you know, what is the most important science to do with the spacecraft at a particular time. And so much of my own 16 years on the project has been involved with that, getting scientists to negotiate with each other. and then you bring in the engineers who tell
oh my
you what
gosh.
The
engineers.
Constraints are on the spacecraft, you know, because you could only turn the spacecraft so fast. You could only use so much power at a particular time. And so you have to negotiate all those parameters.
So I've accepted that Cassini, we're ending it. Fine. I get it. I
we
won't argue with you.
It.
I have to accept it. But I'm curious what, you know, so that's cool to hear about kind of a typical day and some of the things that, you know, you're doing. But what are you going to do? What's next? Like, what will you all do once it you know, has its final crash?
Well, it depends on where people are at in their careers. I know several scientists who are plan on retiring after.
Really?
Because they've spent a good 20, 30 years of their lives on the mission, and they're ready to retire.
Find their sandy beach.
That's right.
Yeah, right. Yes. And then there's others on the project. For example, a typical engineer will find something in their own specialty or maybe something completely different if they wish to do something different. And they'll look for missions that involve their area of expertise. So for example, the propulsion engineers will be looking for the next mission needing advanced propulsion systems, for example. And they'll take their knowledge, what they've learned with Cassini, you know, to the next project. I've started working on the Europa Clipper mission. That is a mission being designed at this time to go to Europa with a launch date in the early 2020s. And so there's a lot of work to be done there. So. So I'll be doing a little of that, and then I'll probably want to do my own research. I'm an atmospheric scientist by trade, so I'm very interested in the last minutes of data that Cassini brings back.
Well, yeah, I think there'll still be lots to learn just from the last final days. Well, this has been great, and you know, this mission has been awesome. I think the pictures that come back of the play of the rings and the moons, it's just really got a lot of people excited. So I want to congratulate you on a good run, 13
Definitely.
Years around the planet, and really inspired a lot of people, I think.
Well, I thank you and the public for their support. We couldn't do this without the taxpayer dollar. And so this is all for the taxpayer that we're doing it.
That's right. Well, we can't wait for the next one, the Europa Clipper. I'm excited about that. So, well, we've been talking with Scott Edgington, Deputy Project Scientist on the Cassini mission to Saturn. Thanks so much, Scott, for talking with us.
It's been my pleasure.
As you can imagine, during Dean's outreach work, he visits with a lot of schools, a lot of students, a lot of curious young people, and they have some great questions that they like to ask. And I picked one that I thought was very appropriate. We're talking about Saturn.
Oh, good. A Saturn
one. Are you excited?
Yes. I'm perked up.
Whatever that means.
I was nodding. I was nodding off there for a second.
Oh, yeah, okay. Right. Sorry to bore you.
Now I'm focused.
Oh, great.
Saturn.
So, So the question is, you know, some kids have asked, what Saturn's rings are made of.
Oh, yeah.
Can they, like, stand on them? Can they jump? I don't know.
That's a really common question. So what are these rings that make Saturn so picturesque? I mean, well, so first let's think of the structure. The rings are a couple hundred thousand miles across. So they are wide.
Wait, like?
Wide. They're almost 200,000 miles wide. So that's how big they are. When you see those ring pictures, 200,000 miles
from one end
to the other.
Yeah.
But they're only about 100 feet thick. That's it. 100 feet
in most places.
So 200,000 miles wide, 100 feet thick.
Wow.
So what in the world is going on here? Can a structure be that flat and gigantic?
Hmm.
So when I was a kid, I saw these pictures of Saturn, and I remember telling my teacher, this is kind of embarrassing.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
I said, I told him, the teacher, I was like, someday I'm going to fly to Saturn and ride my bike around the rings. I mean, it's like,
whoa.
Isn't that a perfect, like, 12-year-old answer
to things?
This
really happened?
Yes, this happened. It's very embarrassing.
Can we get her on the show?
The teacher was like, no, dummy, you can't do that. Actually, we didn't really know all that much about Saturn back there in the dark ages of whatever year that was.
Yeah, I was going to say, back, what were the 50s like?
Just kidding.
That's mean.
It hurts. Anyway, so that wouldn't have worked even if I could fly out to Saturn. And so,
are you just being negative, or would it really not have worked?
It would not have worked because of what Saturn's rings are made of. They look like it's a solid thing, like a road, but they are individual bits of rock, ice, and dust. They are like little pieces of gravel, like millions of pieces of gravel. They are not. It's not a flat, smooth thing. It's just a whole bunch of rocks and gravel and dust that are circling around the planet. So it's like zillions of little moonlets that are all going around the planet. So each ring orbits in a different speed too. So it doesn't all go at the same rate. So the rings that are closer to the planet go faster than the rings that are farther from the planet. So you couldn't ride your bike around the rings. You could hop from bit to bit and go around. So if I brought a pogo stick, that might have worked.
That is kind of from your era, pogo stick.
Again, not the 50s.
This is so fun. Oh, man.
This is good. This is really good.
You're telling your teacher you're going to ride your bike. She's like, no, you're not.
That's right. I'm going to ride my buggy across there with my... my trike.
Oh my God.
No. But anyway, so that's what the rings are made of. They're little bits of ice and dust. Now, the origins of the rings, we're not quite sure. We think that it's broken up moons, larger moons that crashed into each other and shattered into all these pieces that are now spread across this thin ring. Or it could have been a moon that came too close to Saturn and its gravitational pull just ripped it to shreds. But it does seem like the rings are there to stay. We are thinking that might be only a temporary thing, that they're there for only a short amount of time, like a couple hundred million years or something like that.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
But that's short for us.
Yeah, totally.
But it looks like they have a mechanism to keep the rings in place. There's all these moons that I was talking about that they're inside the rings and outside the rings that keep the rings in place pretty much. So they're not disintegrating as fast as we thought they might.
Wow.
So the Saturn's rings will be there for the rest of our lives from what we can tell and for us to enjoy.
That's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Scott Edgington for joining us. And get in touch with us. We're on Twitter at Looking Up Podcast, or drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org.
Ask us a question, give us a topic suggestion, or ask your kids what they'd like to ask an astronomer or scientist, and we'll try to answer them on a future episode.
And remember to subscribe to Looking Up on iTunes and rate us there, or on Stitcher, or from wvxu.org/lookingup. Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Rick Andrus is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provided additional technical assistance.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.